last time, we can go to see a little bit derived on it and so on. The Rambam is in Sotah Torah Perek Aleph Halacha Yud, where the Rambam speaks about what did Moshe Rabbeinu mean when he said that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should show him all his glory and so on. And the Rambam explained that, this is what we spoke about last time, that he wants to have a very clear sense of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we dwelled on it a bit. The Rav over here argues on it, and I wanted to go through the drop. As you know, the Ravid wrote critical comments on the Rambam, and he's the first person to really argue, and argues very sharply, and here he argues at length, so we'll see it inside. It's the little thing, it's like that little thing sticking around the Rambam on the bottom. Halacha Yud Mauser Shebikesh Moshe Rabbeinu Shem Ha'arenin Nas Kvodcha Bikesh Leida Amitas Imoche Vash Prokha Sheyadua Belevavak Levias Ech Nash Hashra. That's a quote from the Rambam. The Aleph Aleph is Omar Avram. That's how he always starts his comment. Avram said, Ein Daitim Yoshevas HaDvarav. I don't really like his answer. Valoi, he says, Rol Har Sinai Mikvodo Ubarbem Yom Shaluch Zeshonos. He saw at Sinai, and for 40 days he was with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he saw Mashal Eroh, Navi, V'choza. Now no prophet ever saw what Moshe saw. Achekinu b'malach ha'sheres. The angels were jealous of him. U'bikesh adoch, they wanted to push him. Achekach b'kis ha'kochot. Which is a direct quote from the Medrash, that it says when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Shemayim to get the Torah, the angels were jealous, and they wanted to destroy him, except HaKadosh Baruch Hu to hold on to the throne, which has its own explanation. But whatever it is, all the Rav at once from it is to say, how can you get more than that? I mean, more than what you saw at Har Sinai and what he saw in Shemayim, and he saw to such a degree that the angels felt put down. So what else could he want? One. The Oidi says, in Haisaz Isa Bakasha, if this was his request, Matsoech Bitshuva Loma Vechanosa Sha'ochm Vechamte Sha'arachim. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu continue and tell him the Yud Gimel Midos, you know, Hashem, Hashem, Kerachim, V'chanan, which the Rambam himself answers someplace else in the Guide to Perplex, the Mor Nevuchim. The Rambam says that he has two requests, and one reply was for one for the other. Avali says, L'fi sha'am la'aboy la'ala b'kir b'cho p'nachalcha b'derech, u'bikesh Moshe she'yoshuv. I'll synopsis what he says. He says, basically, Moshe Rabbeinu was not at all asking that God reveal himself greater. He simply was saying like this, Hashem had said, I will not go with you, I'm going to send an angel with you. He said, I refuse to go until you come with us, and show me a sign that you're coming with us. Show me some sort of phenomena which will prove that you're with us. So that is how the Ravid learns. There's one very fascinating comment at the end of the Ravid. Upane v'achorai, take a look at the very last line. Upane v'achorai, what Moshe asked for to see the front of HaKadosh Baruch on the back of it, so gadolhu, it's a tremendous secret. Ve'iro legaloso lekol adam, and it's not appropriate to reveal the secret to common people, to the people at large. And maybe the one who's writing this, the Rambam himself, does not know it, does not understand it, which is a sharp comment of the Ravid against the Rambam, that he had no access to Kabbalah. The Ravid's commentary is fascinating. There's also a counter comment. If you'll take a look at the bottom, there's a sefer called Migdal Oz. There's a commentary right under the Pirush, Migdal Oz. It's like towards the bottom of the page. Who wrote the Migdal Oz is very not clear. He is a commentary on the Rambam who tries to answer all sorts of problems that was raised on the Rambam. People don't consider his answers as being the answer, but here there's an interesting footnote that he says. Let me just see if I can get to it. It's on the other side of the page, on the next page. Vasher Ramas,
Basher Ramas Harav, it's like right over here, on page Lamed Zayin, on Omud Lamed Zayin. Basher Ramas Harav, Reb Avraham, El Mikubul Mipel Peder Kodesh Yikor Lesirus Hashem Kori. The fact that the Ravid is alluding to Kabbalah, and that the Rambam was not privy to Kabbalah, Uladaiti Sharambam Yoda Ben Besayf Yamav. I think he said that the Rambam knew about it in his last years. It's assumed very strongly that Rambam did not have access to Kabbalah. And there's certainly not a clue to it in any of his writings. There's certainly a lot of indications against it. But he says he knew about it. Shani Meid, I am testify. Shereisi Bisfarat Eretz Molaretenu, I saw in Spain, where in my home country, Kosov b'megillah shel klaf yoshem yushem ushen lashon zeh, written on an old parchment, the following statement: Ani Moshe ber Maimon, when I Moshe ber Maimon, kshiradati lechadrei merkava, when I started looking into Maisim merkava, binosi binyan akeitz, I looked into the inyanim of Mashiach. And what the Rambam writes is very similar to what the Kabbalim write. I saw another tshuva from the Rambam. The Rambam states, he started explaining all the agados in the Gemara the way he wanted to. He saw that after explaining it, it still was not clear, and he thinks that these type of things remain hidden, and so on and so forth. So he wants to understand from this that the Rambam had access and was privy to Kabbalah. I mean, his proofs are not terribly strong proofs. There's another work written was written by the Radzina Rebbe, who was an awesome Talmud Chacham and very deep thinker. He wrote the Sfarim, it's called Sod Yesharim. He wrote a Halak Dhamma trying to prove that the Rambam, you find clues in the Rambam that it access to Kabbalah. The clues are brilliant. I mean, there are some of the things that are just mind-boggling. For instance, but it's still what you're convinced when you finish with it is that he was a genius, the one who wrote it, the Radzina was a genius, you're less than convinced. I'll give you some of the examples. He has 35 points that he matches up. First of all, the Rambam, the Rambam writes reasons for all the mitzvahs, and he goes through them. Fairly straightforward, simple reasons. He goes into the reasons for everything the Beis HaMikdash. And, you know, the reasons are this is beautiful, and this is nice, and this is a cover, and this is a dignity, and this is this. Very, very straightforward, simple reasons. That he gets to the Lechem upon him, he says, I don't know the reason for Lechem upon him. That's the bread upon him. Which is quite strange, because it was so easy with the Rambam's flow to put in some Lechem upon him. You know, it's not hard, but the Rambam says, I don't really know the reason for this. Fine. The Rizal, when he writes in his Pizmon for Shabbos, when he writes about the different things of Shabbos, he writes, Yigalalon Taimer the Trace in a Hammer. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu reveal to us the taste of the 12 Chalos, which is the Lechem upon him. So, meaning, he implies that the Rizal did not either have the key to understanding it. That this is something that in Kabbalah also is not clear as to the reason for it, which is remarkable that, you know, that should match up. One, then he has things that the Rambam wrote about Keturis that are strikingly similar. What else does he have like that? He has there are a lot of things there that really, really show a lot of genius on him. I don't know if they're convincing 100%. There's also the Avodas HaKodesh, which was a very early semi-Kabbalah work, also brings this down. It's an interesting footnote to history, I guess. It's a Here he speaks a little bit about how it came down, the Maseros of Kabbalah, and this. Brings the following nusach. He speaks about Kabbalah versus philosophy. He brings a tshuva of the Rivash. Then he says umilan. He says some of the people who don't want to learn Kabbalah bring proof from gedolim who did not learn Kabbalah. So he says umilan a gadol b'philosophic Rambam zal, and who is as great in philosophy as the Rambam. Ukshemotza Hamargolius, when he found this diamond of Kabbalah, Hishlich Miyodav Zatzreiris, he threw away all of the garbage. Va'echad Mechachma Emes, Shebiya Seiris Rabbanzal, one of the Bali Kabbalah who explained the Ramban's work, Kasa Beparsha Beshalach Zeloshin, wrote the following point, that Reb Yaakov went to Mitzrayim and gave over Kabbalah to the Rambam, and he was so happy with it, but he was upset that he only found it after he had written all of his farm. So those are bits and pieces that float around about it. Just an interesting side note. It's not, it doesn't have to do with this, but since it's mentioned here, I thought it'd be interesting to bring it. There's one more. One of the important explanations to Rambam's question is worth giving over. That actually he gives the Avodas HaKodesh. What did Moshe Rabbeinu want when he asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu, show me your glory? And he said Lo Yirani Adam V'choy, and then he told him the Yud Gimel Midos. What's the connection of Gimel Midos to what he asked and so on? So the Avodas HaKodesh says the following. The Gemara says Moshe Rabbeinu asked from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, tell me why Tzadik V'ralo Rasha V'Tovel. The ultimate question on Emunah is why sometimes good people suffer and why sometimes bad people have it good. That's ultimately the problem. So that was with Moshe Rabbeinu, and that Moshe Rabbeinu said Yana V'choy. So he explains it as follows. The ultimate emuna of a person is of Hashem Echad. That's really where emuna heads to. That all of the events that happen come from one source, and it's behind every phenomenon in the world. If we explain it rationally, for instance, if I were to see that good people were always rewarded and bad people were punished, so that's one God. That's quite easy to see. You know, it's one point, and the problem is we don't see it that way. We see a lot of mixed messages, which seem to indicate there are a lot of things that affect it. Sometimes chance, sometimes nature, sometimes circumstance, sometimes forces. Depending on what you believe, the easiest explanation is that there are two elements at work. Just like science likes clear formulas. If something consists of two patterns, for instance, the easiest way to explain an orbit of a planet is an ellipse or something of that nature. But if you've got two phenomena, you say there's both an orbit and it's a rotation around this axis, because the orbit is not going to explain night and day no matter what you do with it. So you say, you know, there are two forces working on it. If you shoot a bullet and it doesn't follow the straight line of a trajectory, then you know there's a wind blowing someplace. There's another element affecting it. So whenever we can't come up with a simple and straightforward cause and effect, the right answer is there are two causes, and that's why it depends on other things as well. So therefore, when we see Tzadik V'Ralo, Rasha V'Tovlo, we say like this, we can't tie this back, the way we see it, to one God who likes good and hates evil. It does. So, there are laws of nature, there are circumstances, there are other factors at work, depending, or there is no God, but all of those are the real issues that drive everything back to this problem. What Moshe Rabbeinu, the ultimate knowledge that a person can strive for, is understand how it all connects to God. How is it possible that, where exactly is that thread that everything comes from? And to quote the language that the Avodas HaKodesh uses, where's the point at which God begins to spread out, so to speak? Where's the point at which it begins from that one emes, the tzaddik v'tovlo, the tzaddik v'ralo, the rosh v'tov, the rosh v'ralo, all come out? Let me get that point. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, Lo yirani adam v'choy means there is no, a person cannot survive if he were to understand it, because then emuna becomes meaningless. There is no nisoyon not to put your hand into a socket, because you know you get zapped when you do it. Everybody's probably experienced it when he was a kid, and everybody stuck his share of keys into the electric sockets, and that's it. So people say, well, why doesn't God strike you dead when you mechal Shabbos? Then keeping Shabbos would not be a meaningful act. It would be the same reason why people don't jump out of windows, why people don't put hands in electric sockets. That's a teva. So a person could not perceive God in his role in the world perfectly and remain in any way a functioning human. He would just be a robot doing, staying away from harm and doing what's good for him in a very physical way. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, I will give you one revelation that has a taste of that, and that's the Yud Gimel Midas Rachamim. In other words, Yud Gimel Midas Rachamim, the way the quote of Avodas HaKodesh is, where God's ultimate good shines through even at a time when he seems to be not around. The Yud Gimel Midas Rachamim are an ultimate request for Rachamim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even when the entire system of Midas HaDin protests it, and therefore he was giving him over this is a taste of it. It also kind of explains the kesher shel tefillin. It says HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed Moshe the knot of the tefillin. Kesher tefillin her l'anav. HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed Moshe the knot of the tefillin, which symbolizes, which sort of represents, the tefillin works like this. You have something on top of the cerebrum, on top of the thinking part of the head. And there's a strap that comes around and connects it with basically the cortex. That's the basic area of it. It's the place where the spine, as far as we can feel, sort of links up with the head. There's where you have the knot, and then you have two strands coming down this way. They sort of express the point at which the moach ends and the activity begins. The place where what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has in mind sort of flows into the world around. So we don't see above that knot, but that knot is, so to speak, where it comes together at a certain point. So it's the ultimate that a person can see within the hashgacha. Higher than that, where that comes from, that's beyond man. So Moshe Rabbeinu had the highest percent, but the issue was not the way the Rambam says, knowing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu exists, so to speak, which seems to be the pashut pshat of it. Not like the Ravid says that it was bechlal, not any deep request of it, but just a sign of HaKadosh Baruch Hu being knowing them. But rather, it's a whole new inyan. It's understanding where the yichud of HaKadosh Baruch Hu flows into the world around. That's the way he expresses it. That's it's Avodas HaKodesh, and it is the understanding that a lot of people from that strain basically relate to it. Okay, Yud Aleph. V'kivushin is bar she'eno guf. By the way, just an ancillary footnote to this point. There's the third Lubavitcher Rebbe was called a Tzemach Tzedek. Tzemach Tzedek was recognized as an immense Talmud Chacham, as an extraordinary Talmud Chacham. He was the first Rebbe to be sort of accepted by the literature world. Some people maybe say the last, but at least he was recognized and had interaction with the literature world, who respected him highly, and he himself had a lot more of the hallmarks of belonged to the Torah world. It was a place where basically there was a much coming closer to that world. He was a tremendous genius. He wrote Charles Achuvas they have of his. He also must have written about 250,000 pages of Pirushim and Chassidus and Jewish. He used to write, I think they wrote about him, that he wrote so quickly that the page would not be dry at the beginning when he got to the end. He was a voluminous writer. I mean, they've put out, one of the things they put out is a collection of pieces of his works that takes up a full shelf. Really, really prolific writer. And I saw a piece of his, I don't know if it's his or it's from the Baal HaTanya, because a lot of it is, he takes from Baal HaTanya and explains it, but the point he writes is as follows. The mitzvah of Emunah, he postulates, does not exist where Yediyah is possible. In other words, to understand that there is a creator, since one can kind of lay it down rationally and axiomatically, and sort of it makes a lot of sense, the mitzvah over there is to understand it with your seichel, because it's something the seichel can come to grips with, that there's a God, that there's Ashkach, and so on. The place where Emunah really comes into play is where it's intrinsically not comprehensible to a person. Those things that people cannot understand, not because they just happen not to understand it, but they really can't understand it, that's where the mitzvah of Emunah is. And that's why he says, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokein Hashem Echad is the mitzvah of Emunah, because to believe that Hashem exists is something that the mind should be able to have developed. To believe that Hashem runs the world is something also a person can kind of sketch it out, personal experience, history, stuff like that. What's really, really difficult to do is to understand how the good and the bad both come from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How the Tzadik V'Ralo and the Rosh V'Tovo are part of that same scheme. That's something that the mind cannot understand. And that's why the realm of understanding is not there, it's only the realm of Emunah. Emunah is specifically Hashem Echad, because Yediyah is not possible. No matter how well you'll explain it, no matter how you understand, you will not understand it. It's something that's above the line of where understanding was drawn. By the way, let me add a comment to this, because there's a Rashi that says that, and in a certain sense, this I think is the point where science and religion really are at loggerheads. In a very, very basic way. Rashi says like this, Goyim will come to you. Actually, we read it this week in the Paraduma. Goyim will come to you and they will mock you. And they'll say, what sense is Paraduma? Like, does Paraduma make sense or not? So they'll say, so the answer is, so he says, Osul Cholahare. Choyku, it's a choke, and you're not allowed to think about it. So I don't understand the dialogue. Either start by saying, Rabbi Yisrael, Torah and the chok part of Torah should not be thought about. Forget about the introduction. Forget about the guy coming and saying, hey, what kind of stupid law is it? They say, you know, there's some things things you're not allowed to touch, there are things you're not allowed to use, and you're not allowed to think about chukim. If the guy is asking the question and it bothers you why things are so stupid, so don't tell me it's us, sir. Like, don't pull the religion on me. If he's asked the question, put me on the spot. Okay, so what do I answer now? Also to talk about, okay? Well, it's off the. Let me have a whole series of you know, how speakers cope with difficult questions. We'll get to that point soon. Well, you know, it really deserves a lecture of its own. You know, there's like a whole slew of ways how to. Someone told me he heard somebody. This person had a position of a great rabbinical position, but was kind of short on scholarship, and this person gave a shiur at a yeshiva. This was in Israel. And someone asked him a really tough question. So this person was very pompous, drew himself up to his full height, said, that question, please take up with your teacher when I leave. Like, it's beneath my dignity. We'll let your teachers take care of it. That was the... So but what kind of answer? You know, the guy comes and says, I understand you. You know, this doesn't begin to make sense. You know, it's a red cow, and you burn it, and you sprinkle dust, and you touch dead bodies, and it's mitaras atmei, mitaras atorah. So then we say, all right, 1 second, it's Oslahar. So I once sort of worked b'shem Reb Chatzka Levenstein, and I'm saying it over a little bit differently. HaKadosh Baruch Hu had a mission that he wanted humans to accomplish. So, tefillin, so he gave him hands, tzedakah, gave him pockets. Every single mitzvah, every single organ of a person was cut to fulfill a mission. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted man to understand a lot. So he gave him a brain that could understand. What was not given to understand, there's no brain. It's not that the brain came first and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, let's see if we can what we could teach him. It's the other way around. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave certain mitzvahs to do, certain mitzvahs to say with your mouth, certain mitzvahs to think about, and certain mitzvahs not to think about. Certain mitzvahs were not given in the realm of understanding time and mitzvahs. For those mitzvahs, we don't have the required brain cells that could process it. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't just give us a brain, it didn't just evolve, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't just give us a brain and then interact with the Torah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us equipment to deal with what he wanted. And those parts that don't have a makom as a gilui of seichel and chachma, there is no brain for it. So that's exactly what we're answering the goyim. And there's something there very, very, it goes to the heart, like I told you, between science and religion. A scientist attitude, and I would say a person who's a priori secular, says the following. The only thing that's certain in the world is the brain. In the sense that my sense of certainty is the brain. Like all those silly philosophical questions, maybe you're all dreaming. It's possible, but that's the reality I live in. And I can't get out of my bubble. It's a silly time. I might be dreaming, but that's the ultimate. I can't think beyond that. So my mind is the only thing I can be sure of. The thoughts that I think is the only thing I can think. That is really the premise of a secular person, a scientist in a secular sense. And therefore, that which does not come into the realm of understanding simply does not exist as far as I'm concerned. If I can't describe it, whether or not there are angels, if angels define something that can't be seen or felt or heard, is simply a non-scientific entity. It just doesn't fit into science. The same thing, any mitzvah, the Torah itself can be brought into the mind. The point of reference is, does it fit? Does it not fit? The religious person is coming with a very different perspective. Seichel and understanding are the best tools HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives, most important tools. But the first thing is that existence is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the only certain existence. The brain is an organ with which I can get a very large grip on it, but it's only part of the picture. The point of certainty is the Torah. And everything else is part of the picture. So the real distinction is what is the basic person? What is the basic mitzvah? What's the basic reality that you can really touch and say, this exists? That's really, in a sense, the basic difference. Okay, let's see in the realm a little bit further. Halacha Yud Aleph. V'kivan shen izbara. We might actually finish the parak today if we're not careful. V'kivan shen izbara. She'eino gufu gviya. Since we've explained that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not a body, Yisbaya shelo ya'aru v'lo echad mimeoros haguf. Not any one of the physical phenomena apply to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Meaning, besides limbs and organs that he quoted before, there are also no prepositions that really fit HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Above, and he'll explain, lo chibur v'lo pirut, joining, disjunction, junction, disjunction, lo makom v'lo mida, place, size, v'lo aliyah v'lo yirida, up, down, v'lo yamin v'lo small, right, left, v'lo panim v'lo achar, front, back, v'lo yeshiva v'lo amida, not sitting, not standing. In other words, besides physical organs, physical organs are as if describing God himself. These are putting God in the context of a physical world. Higher, lower, straight, right, left. Those are all physical coordinates. So besides when it says the hand of God, but it says that doesn't exist. There's no such thing as a hand. But when it says the right, Yemin Hashem, the right hand of Hashem, there's no such thing as right or left, or front or back. And he mentions one more thing here, which I think is important to explain a little bit. The Eino Motzi Bizman, he is not within time. He is not within time. Achiyelo Reishis Va'achris, so that there's a beginning and an end, Uminyan Shanim, and a number of years. The Eino Mishtane, there's no change. She'eino Dover Shigram Shinu, because there's nothing that causes change. I want to explain a point about this. Everyone says that Kadosh Baruch Hu is above time, time doesn't exist with Kadosh Baruch Hu, so on. What does that mean exactly? I mean, it's very easily said. What does it mean he's above time? He created time. I mean, people go on from the very philosophical things about time being a continuum and it's like a flow and it's like this. But all those things don't mean anything. What does it mean when we say HaKadosh Baruch Hu is above Zman? In what way? So the definition of time, the Maral uses this when he speaks about Pesach. This is actually quite relevant. About Bechipazon. Let's take Purim mostly. No, that's not a bad idea. We have Hamantash in here. Hamantash and Zul Shema. We can do a Hamantash one. It says there's a mission that says Hakara l'mafreya. If you read the Megillah out of order, lo yotza, he's not yotze. So, someone pointed out a very good reason for it. The Megillah, Kriyas Yamsuf, whenever it happened, was a nes. Kriyas Yamsuf, whether it happened on a Sunday or on a Tuesday or on a Wednesday, or if it Chav Gimelissa, someone says, nah, it didn't happen Chav Gimelissa, it happened Tesvav Nisan. It doesn't make it less of a nes. The context of a nes is because it's simply just an extraordinary phenomenon. The story of Purim is not a miracle unless you read the story as a story. There was, you know, there was this plot, and then there was picking out the king getting angry at Vashti and killing her, picking out the girls, finding out. If any of these steps were not to have happened, then it would not be a miracle. So if you take the time element out of it, if you mix up the story, then you lost the nes. Reading Pesach material, not in order, you know, whether the plague of Tzfardeya happened after Kinim or before Kinim, doesn't mix up the story terribly. But in the Megillah, it messes up the story terribly. The whole story is the continuum of events. So, that's the time over there. What do we mean when we say time? The anything, imagine a world that is totally static, like a frozen picture. A picture that's frozen and there's nothing there. So, can we say this picture is a year old, 2 years old, 3 years old? If there's no change, then that statement is meaningless. In other words, let's say I have a frozen picture, and in the picture I'm sitting there like this, and there's no physical, the picture doesn't get faded. So, there's no change, and saying that this picture is 2 years old, or 3 years old, or 4 years old, is meaningless. I could say I took it 3 years ago, but I can't really say. And as time is the measurement for change. Anything and change and cause, effect, and result. All of that transpires within time. If you have a dynamic process where something changes, you've got time. Even forgetting about time in the sense of how long, but steps, like when you do a problem. And like when you do a program for a computer, there's step one, step two, step three, step four. How long it takes? The quicker the chip is, it'll take quicker. But the point is, it's always, you can't have step two before step one, you can have step four before step three. It's cause and effect. That is time. Time is it's a measurement of change, and it's and therefore it consists of steps. And that's why time is relates to a world of change, and it is consists of the steps of change. Now, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself is immutable, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself had nothing caused him to come into being, there is nothing to change in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will never cease to be. So the word time as regards HaKadosh Baruch Hu is meaningless. For me, 10 years means I look different. I change. For my picture that I have of 10 years ago, I can't say this picture is 10 years old. How come I didn't get bald on the picture? And how come my beard didn't turn white? Well, the picture ain't going no place. It's there. A person changes. I look different 10 years later than 10 years before. since HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there is no point of change in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There is nothing about HaKadosh Baruch Hu which I could possibly say cause and effect. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is immune to causes. Nothing is there because of something. It's all intrinsic to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is above time, and that's what he says. He's not a being within time, so that beginning, end, or amount of years could be meaningfully said about him. And he does not change, because there's nothing that could possibly cause a change. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not affected by anything, so there's no cause and effect. What changed HaKadosh Baruch Hu? There is nothing that can affect HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
So how do you put into context in the fact that we have free will and God responds to our actions, that we are partners in creation and things
like that? Yes.
It elicits sort of a response, and yet...
He does speak a little bit about it later. In a macro sense, the question about does God's understanding change? And it's just like you today are different because you know tomorrow you're gonna know who won the basketball game tonight. I only know it was a game because someone offered me a free ticket. So I assume the Wizards are a basketball team. So that I put tomorrow you will have another brain cell that will say the Wizards won or lost, and therefore you have changed. The question is posed: if we have free will, and we cannot really, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not interfere with free will, so when he finds out what we did, does that change? I mean, that's the way the question is put. It's a little bit of kind of blunt way to put it, but it's sort of put that way. And that the Rambam's answer is basically that paradox of free will and God's understanding is something we can't deal with. And we'll see later. The only point that the Rambam does make is the following. When we say God was upset that if Klal Yisrael sinned, or God was happy to do the right thing, when I say about myself I was upset, I'm talking about a change that someone impressed on me. You did something bad, you made me feel not good, made me feel upset. I was the passive being, and you're the active being. You did something nice, you made me feel good. There are physiological effects of feeling good, there are physiological effects of feeling bad or stressed, and so on. So when I speak about a person being affected by someone else's actions, it's as if the active component is the doer, and the one who received it is become affected by it. When it says HaKadosh Baruch Hu was upset, unless it's the next one he says, or HaKadosh Baruch Hu was happy, it means how HaKadosh Baruch Hu reacts or interacts. It does not mean that he was affected. And as the pasuk says, if you sin, you didn't cause me any harm, and if you did good, you didn't cause me any good. If we can give some parallel to it, and again, the parallel is kind of weak, but we'll try to find an analogy to it. Let's say I need to know the answer to some problem. I'm building a house, and I need to know how much paneling do I need for the house. So I pick up a phone and I call the guy, or call some maven, and he tells me. So I was missing that knowledge. I needed it. He supplied it. If he doesn't tell it to me, I'm upset because I needed some knowledge and so on. Let's say a teacher is teaching kids, and the teacher puts a problem on the board. So-and-so has a house of X amount of walls, this is height, this is that. How much paneling does this poor guy need to the house? And the kid tells the teacher, I ain't telling you. You know, figure it out yourself, you know. So now, is the teacher missing anything if the kid is not telling her how much paneling? Besides the fact that the teacher probably knows herself how much paneling, or she can look in the answer book at least, but that question wasn't there because I needed it. That question was because I want to bring out of you some knowledge. I want you to understand it and so on. So I would be upset if my teaching is not going well. But I wouldn't be upset because I don't know how much paneling to put. But the thing is, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu's, it's not that I've prevented from giving something he needed, or vice versa. Because one doesn't have to need, and therefore he's not, quote unquote, personally affected by the good or bad we do. But in the relationship, there is an effect. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's relationship sours when we don't do our part, and so on. That's really the way to go about it. That's the.
Is there something wrong with saying these outside of time? You made it sound like it's less of an answer.
No.
There are people who have explained
it. I know, but I don't buy the explanation. I just feel there's nothing wrong with saying it. But I don't think it's possible. I don't think we know what we're talking about when we say that. It just doesn't. I somehow don't think that it's genuine. I think you can talk about it, you can make the analogies. It just doesn't click to me. If you feel comfortable, there's nothing wrong with saying because those words exist. Because it's outside of time. I just have to figure out what that means. So here I have an understanding of it. Time is the change of anything, which is what time is. And someone who is, there is no such thing as change. If you build a perfect machine and, it doesn't break down, how could you tell if it's 10 years old or 1 day old? If you couldn't tell. You can only tell by the changes in it. And some of that's not, like the difference between me and the picture. You can tell the age. For me to say I aged is a meaningful statement because there are biological changes. For a picture, to say this picture is 20 years old is a meaningless statement. I mean, I could say I snapped a picture 20 years ago, but it's not 20 years old. It's the same picture. It looks exactly the same. But I know people say it. I told somebody once, it was a boy in Eshatara, one of the beginners programs a long time ago. And he was saying that something about God being infinite, he can imagine it, he has some way of. I told him, beating up the wrong bush. You can't imagine infinite. By definition, it means that it's not, you can't get a handle on it. I said, when we speak of God's infinity, I'll tell you what we mean. You can only imagine the following way. Coffee machine needs to be filled with coffee. So if I have a 1 gallon coffee machine, I need to buy 1 gallon coffee, and if four people drink a glass of coffee, I have to change it every day. If it's a 10 gallon, so. If somebody were to get me an infinite coffee machine, it would simply mean I do not have to bring a thermos of coffee from my house because there will always be coffee there. I can say that statement, and that's a meaningful statement. I can't imagine. Human mind is not imagined. I just don't know what those words mean above it. It's correct, but unless I get something to hold it on with, I just don't feel comfortable with it. That's all. There's nothing wrong with it. Okay, one more thing. It says, death and living, in the sense that we speak of living, doesn't exist, even though it does say a live God. And it does speak about it. It says, Elokim Chayim, the living God. Which in the Pashto explanation simply means a true God, as opposed to Avodah Zarah, which is v'lo sichlos v'lo chachma kechachmas ha'isha chacham. Nor is there knowledge and wisdom like a wise person. This is a very important point that Rama makes. Certainly we speak of God's wisdom. God is seen as wise. Living and dead, might be seen as a physical term. But when we say God is smart, yes, we always say, but God and his wisdom. So he says, but that wisdom is not of the same system as our wisdom, and therefore limits that we place on knowledge doesn't apply to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Lo shinov lekeitza, neither sleep nor being up, lo kas, lo schok, neither anger nor happiness, lo simcha latzvas, happiness or depression, lo shtikov ledibor, kedibor adam. Neither being quiet nor speaking as people speak. So again, the Rambam adds this little comment for reason. It does say God spoke. Vaydaber Elokim, Vaydaber Hashem Amol Shleimor, Kol Medaber. The Dibur itself exists. There is a phenomenon where God presents Dibur, but it's not as the same as a person. People can understand God. God can make him communicate with people. And the person can hear a voice, but it's not deeper the way people understand it. Kach amru chachamim. They said, "Ein lemalo lo yeshiva v'lo amida lo orev lo ifu." There is not in Shemayim. There is no sitting, no standing. There is no backside, and there is no tiredness. In other words, both backside and tiredness are sort of a physicality. A person's front side is more. Kind of his spiritual side, and his back is, and tiredness is also when a person is schlepping around the body, there's a certain tiredness. So besides physical entities that don't exist, physical descriptions of moods, situations, any descriptions about God also don't share anything in common with human entities. Okay, we'll hold it here. This is Yud Aleph.